Welcome everyone to the Sports Review. It's proudly brought to you by Westprint. 09 827 8531 is their phone number. Their address is 9 Pereri Street in New Lynn. And their email address is westprint.co.nz. Well, at the moment, I'm trying to get hold of Mr. Lee Piper. We're going to chat a bit of rugby about what's happened in the last couple of weeks. Unfortunately, AJ Whitten is unavailable today. He has a charity do, which he's speaking at, and I know AJ is a really, really good dinner speaker or lunch speaker, so you know he'll be giving it a real good crack today, and hopefully keeps away from those rum and cokes, as I know AJ likes a good old drink once in a while. But he'll be back on Easter Monday, so we are going to go ahead with a show on Easter Monday. I'm just going to play a little bit of music. We're going to try Lee one more time. And if not, unfortunately, I'm going to have to do this. This is what happens on live radio. So I will play a bit of music, and hopefully we get Lee back on. Okay, everyone. Well, the magic of technology has finally kicked in, everyone. So I'm just going to mention something about this, about Lee. Lee's been one of the real, has really been helpful to me since running the show. And, you know, he's helped me out with contacts. He's always been willing to come on the show for me. So I'd like to welcome on in a very good Auckland afternoon to Lee Piper. G'day, Lee. How you going, mate?
I'm well, mate. You're obviously short a guest today if you've got me on.
Well, no. We have you on for the quality, Mr. Piper, and I have to say that you've always been a great help to me, mate, and I really appreciate some of the help you've given me since running the show. I might let you know we might be on 7 sharp this show, so we...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think you'll probably, once you see my face, Lee, you'll definitely say, oh, I've got a face for radio, so we'll keep it at that. Hey, just, we might as well head into the rugby. Well, the Geordie Barrett benefit show at Foreside Bar on Friday, now I have to say, I've never seen a performance like that by just an individual, probably since Dan Carter against the Lions in 2005. Now, you were there. Were you at the game at Foreside Bar?
Yes, I was.
Yeah,
it was an unbelievable effort from Barrett, and I think with that performance, I think it shows the really good side of the Hurricanes and the issues or the challenge that the Highlanders have got. And they're pretty two evenly matched teams, and I guess the Auckland Blues have come back to the pack with their performance against the Chiefs. But at the moment, you know, probably halfway through the competition, Crusaders look a step ahead of everybody else. And then the other four teams are probably fighting off now for second and the wooden spoon. And what I think the Highlanders lack is just that X factor player, the player that's just got the ability to break open a game. And they just don't have the firepower that some of the other teams have. And up until this stage, the Hurricanes really had probably struggled looking for that same sort of firepower, and that's what Geordie Barrett brought on Friday night, and he brought it in spades.
he certainly did. And I must admit, when watching that game on Friday, I was quite impressed with Lanapi and Rayasi were very good. And it was, and I have to say, Duplessis Corriffy had a really good game, and it was great to see Dane Coles back for the Hurricanes.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've mentioned, you've pretty much covered the crop there, haven't you? And to my point previously, you just don't have that in the Highlanders side. So when you have a look at it, and you know, they probably cop a fair amount of criticism, some of it's warranted, but they just don't have that. Their back line they've got, yeah. You know, they still haven't worked out who their 10 is between Mitch Hunt and Josh Ioane. Their midfield, C.O. Tomkinson's been, you know, stable at 12, but he's just solid without being spectacular. 13, they're not sure about. I don't think they know their back three either. Freedom Vahakolo, his debut, yep, he did some good things, but it's going to take him time. No Jonah Nareki, that really doesn't help them. Connor Bashett, Gunn Bashett, not quite there, and Josh Ioane, unfamiliar at 15. Into the forward pack, you saw the impact of Frizzell.
Oh, yeah,
game, and but no Liam Squire, and everyone else is kind of doing their job. Then you compare that with the Hurricanes and the players you've mentioned, the Crusaders have got All Blacks everywhere. Then you look at the Chiefs, even with the likes of Weber. We've got a game breaker, Damien McKenzie. Then in the forwards, have obviously got the likes of Sam Kane. They've got Jacobson. So they've got key players in key positions, and the Blues have got almost as much chance as the Crusaders. So in that way, I think probably the Highlanders are punching not too bad, but I think for them to be successful in the years ahead, they're going to have to certainly come up with some firepower and the backs. And you remember back to 2015 when they won it, you know, you had the likes of Lima Sapawanga, Richard Buckman,
yep.
Malachi Fekitoa, you had Naholo, Ben Smith. You know, that's the sort of quality that they're going to need if they want to get back in the game.
Yeah, to be quite honest with you, Lee, I think, you know, I did have a quick check on Thomas Umanga Jensen. I think he is a prospect, but whether he's there right now, I'm not too sure. But, you know, they really need a real good direct runner at number 12 or at number 13, someone who can break that line, because when you look at that Hurricanes back line, a guy like Lanapi, he's just going to break that line straight away. You know, he's got some of the best line breaks in the competition. Now, just while we're here, we might as well move on to the Saturday game. And another fullback, the great escape in Hamilton. I have to say, when we were talking about midfielders, that Quinton Tupia, what a game he had.
Yeah, he did. I mean, that was. I think the Blues will be disappointed in that game. And really, when they look at the end of the game, I wondered whether they'd made some good decisions around just knocking over that 3 points at the end there and just getting out to that seven-point margin. But they went for the corner and turned it over. But I also think that win from the Chiefs, I'm not sure they would have won that game if the 7 days previously they hadn't beaten the Hurricanes and had that come-from-behind win. And it'll be interesting also to see what effect the Warriors come-from-behind win has. Just your whole mentality through the week changes. You've got a bit more of a skip in your step. The fans are talking to you. Trainings are a little bit easier. And then when you get behind the games, you have the ability to hang in and have a bit more self-belief. And we saw that in spades on Saturday at the Toronto, and they did that well. But again, to my point, you know, they've got a game breaker. They've got a guy in Jacobson who just gets a massive engine and keeps on going. You've got Brad Weber who can be there or thereabouts. And then when you've got a guy like McKenzie and Leonard Brown, you've got a couple, particularly in McKenzie, you've got a guy who with 5 minutes to go, you would definitely chuck the ball in his hand, and that's what happened, and then it was game, set, and match.
Yeah, I have to say, Luke Jacobson's game, I tell you what, in the last few weeks, he's actually, he played well the week before, and of course, you can see why the All Blacks looked at him in 2019. Unfortunately, he got an injury prior to the World Cup. Maybe he is the guy that's putting up his hand to say Ian Foster and the selectors, don't forget about me. Also, Angus Tarvale, I felt, had quite a good game. The blue scrum didn't look as menacing as it has looked in previous weeks.
Yeah, and I thought that's where the Chiefs might struggle, because to this point, I thought the Blues potentially would have done better against the Crusaders, because at least they had the firepower up front to match them. In the previous weeks, we had seen the Chiefs get blown away by the Crusaders, particularly up front, and the Highlanders get blown away by the Blues up front. And to me, that's why I thought the Blues might have been a bit more competitive against for Crusaders. But your point's a valid one. The Chiefs scrum has started to really muscle up, and I think that was one of the main attack weapons that the Blues were, which they thought they might have had, but they couldn't, you know, they couldn't use in the end. But you look at the loose forwards around, you know, Jacobson, you've got Popoligo. I thought he had a good game. Oh, yeah. Brazil had a good game for the Highlanders. Sam Kane's been playing well. There's lots of depth in 6, 7 and 8, and there's going to be lots for the All Black selectors to choose from when they get to that point.
It certainly is, and I must admit, I do enjoy when he comes on as old big red Tom Robinson. He is such a quality. He's such quality off the bench, and I'm wondering, when is Leon McDonald going to give the guy a starting spot? He's got to give it to him at some stage.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, though, isn't it? Because I think, you know, probably potentially a little bit like me, we do look at players and go, geez, you know, great player, he's done amazing off the bench, we need to start him, when actually his best position is off the bench. And sometimes guys like Robinson have a far greater impact on a game when there's 20 to go and he can just fire into it. Some of the players or the opposition is just starting to tire, and he's much more effective there than he might be off the bench. And I remember players like Piri Wepu, I always felt was much better coming off the bench. Jimmy Cowan was sort of starting in that era, going well, and then off came Wepu. And it was the same cause, he needs to start. But actually, when he did start, he wasn't as effective. And that's because in the course of an 80-minute game, lots of different things happen, and players with 20 minutes to go, you know, the scoreline dictates what you may or might not do. Players are with fatigue. Injuries might have happened. Yellow cards might have happened. So I think you have to have a look at the game as a whole and squads as a whole. And at the moment, I think Robinson's doing the job for the Blues, so I tend to leave him there.
Okay, just some news. Of course, we go back to the Hurricanes Highlanders game. Aaron Smith, record games for the Highlanders. He's been a great servant for the Highlanders, hasn't he? Since 2011, I believe, Lee.
Yeah, came in under Cowan and then quickly came into the number one spot and has continued on and to stay with one franchise and just not get injured or not succumb to overseas offers. And particularly when you're an international player, I think it's been a credit for him. He certainly clearly had his up and downs on and off the field, but I think he's grown from all of those, and you could, that was plain to see on Saturday night. He'll be disappointed in the performance of his Highlanders, but he should be proud of himself and what he's bought. And now it's really his job to bring the next guy through and fill out Fakatava, and yep. You can see quite a bit of Aaron Smith already developing in him. And I think, you know, it was great to see Smith re-sign with the New Zealand Rugby Union for a couple more years. I think the Highlanders will benefit both on and off the field from his influence.
Yeah, he's a true professional, as Aaron Smith. Yeah, just some other news in rugby. Will Rugby are going to fund the Mona Pacifica team and hopefully next year's Super Rugby ATRO 2022. And it looks like they're also going to fund the Fijian team to enter the Australian competition. So that's all good news. And, of course, Scotland beating France in the Six Nations. Well, as AJ Wetton said to me, you can never pick France. He said they're kind of like the Warriors. You don't know what team's going to turn up.
Yeah, your first point there around the Pacifica teams, that's going to be really interesting to see how they, not how they fund, but how they select those. I mean, when you look at look at Super Rugby at the moment and just the amount of injuries and head knocks and the fatigue of the players and all teams going through massive amounts of squads, it's just the game's a little bit quicker, that the body clashes at the contact area are massive, and so players, and then you've got the overseas factor, the fact that the players are looking at overseas contracts, still there's not too bad money in Europe. It's going to start to ramp up, particularly as COVID hopefully starts to diminish. Where are these players going to come from? And you mentioned a couple like say a Ray Arce, might not be in the All Black frame at the moment. Sullivan from Auckland as well. It's four or five, probably half a dozen to 10 players who are at the moment not on the All Black radar. Now, what happens with those players? If you take they're very good Super Rugby players. So you start taking those players out of those Super Rugby sides, where's the next step of players coming from? Because at the moment, I just don't see it through our NPC that those players are up to the standard that we want. You could argue that it creates a bigger depth in New Zealand rugby by giving more players a go. You could also counter-argue with that it diminishes the competition and takes a real class factor out. So for me, it's going to be brilliant to have them in the competition, no question, and they shouldn't be left out. But particularly if they've got funded, but where is their player base coming from?
Dead right, Lee. I think we have to be concerned because we don't have the depth as we used to in New Zealand rugby. Anyway, Lee, I'll have to love you and leave you. Thank you so much for coming off the bench, as you always do, and all the great help you've given me with this show. And I've got no doubt, Lee, I will be texting you again to come on at some point.
And I look forward to that. You enjoy your day.
Hey, thanks a lot. Okay, that was Lee Piper. God, what a good bloke he is. He's just one of the real good guys of the industry in New Zealand, and really helpful. He's helped me out a lot. Okay, I'm going to play a bit of music, and then we'll go and we'll have Blue McLennan on talking a bit of NRL. Okay, everyone, now we come to the NRL. What a great comeback by the Warriors, I'll tell you something. When you watch the Warriors, then if you've got a heart condition, I advise you not to watch them because they'll definitely have you in certain times of heartbreak and emotion. And on the line we have, as we always do on a Monday, my good mate and ex-Kiwis coach, ex-Leeds Rhinos, ex-New Zealand Warriors coach, Bluey McLennan. G'day, Bluey. The sun may not be shining here in Auckland, but I tell you what, the sun was shining definitely on Saturday.
Yeah, certainly was, Piggy. Good to be on, mate. How heartening was that? And, you know, it's a massive thing for a team to have, you know, in their memory banks that, you know, they can rise off the canvas, get up and fight their way back into a game. And so, you know, it's a really important thing to have for a team to know that they can do it. So it's going to, you know, hold them in good stead and keep them fighting in another game this season.
It certainly will, Blue. And I tell you, anyone that has been asleep or been living on Mars, the Warriors 34, the Canberra Raiders 31 now. In the past, the Warriors, when they were down 31 points to 10, past Warriors sides, you could see that doubling to 50 points. You could see it heading to a 50-point thrashing. This Warriors side, and I'll tell you what, maybe the emphasis from last season where they've got that culture, they've got a bit of heart, like last season, that they really showed some ticker. This season, that ticker's come into play, and I'll tell you what, we're going to miss him when he goes, old RTS, but I'm really impressed with also Cody Nikorima. Had a great game, and Fenua Blake, very, very good. He is the alpha male.
Yeah, he certainly is. And, you know, I think for people that wondered about Roger, whether he would have the commitment for this year, well, he's already answered that. And, you know, we move on and let him play out the year, and he will compete. It's just in his nature. The other players, yeah, Cody, when he's running, forever dangerous. You know, I think Sean O'Sullivan was conductor, yeah. So it allows Cody to just sniff around, look for breaks and run. So that's a good thing. I really liked the hooker. He's developing some really nice combos. I thought his pass to Surinan was really smart, and his little trick plays with Roger, getting them on the other side of the play the ball ruck. So young Wade, his service is really good. So there's a lot of positives out of it. They stayed at the middle, which was smart because obviously Canberra Raiders were under adversity. But that's not the Warriors' problem, you know. Other team gets injuries, that's their business.
Yep.
You've got to stay ruthless with it, and yep, the Warriors do, well done. Yeah.
Certainly do. So that really made my weekend of the NRL. But we better get to the other games. The Panthers 12, Storm 10 on the Thursday night games. The Filimani kick our try saver with Ollam. I really felt Ollam should have passed that ball. He had a guy outside of him.
100%. Craig Bellamy, his nickname's Bellyache. Because he gives you a bellyache when you're sitting in the review room looking at film and he's hammering you. Well, I'm telling you what, Ollam's going to have a bellyache. Addo Carr scores that easy, should he pass? But, hey, you know, mistakes happen, but what a game. the quality of that game was through the roof. Grand final replay certainly was. Really good for the Panthers, you know, because you spend all summer, you know, brooding on losing a grand final and you never ever get over them. So, you know, it's nice for them to get the chocolates this time, but what a game.
Certainly was. And of course, the Dragons, they keep on. Their season seems to be getting better, but Manly look really helpless. They beat Manly, who look really helpless at the moment, 38 points to 12. Now, Des Hasler will be under a bit of pressure, so good on the Dragons, but it's not looking good for you Manly supporters. And, of course, the other game. What a fantastic game, and I hate to say it, I've got another one, Bluey, so it's, I've got to get... We'll find somebody who's playing the Bulldogs or something, and I'll take the Bulldogs. The Rabbitohs 26, the Roosters 16, Latrell and Cody Walker. I tell you what, they are fantastic to watch.
Oh, they are. You know, they've just got natural skill. And they're smart with it too. They really teamed up and played those nice little short sides around by Carey and Joseph Manu and Morris. It was really nice to see. The other good thing about that Rabbitohs game against Roosters is the Roosters have come out of it worse for wear, and that's
just
playing
for that,
it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rabbitohs.
Yeah, well, yeah, big concerns with Luke Kerry probably out. Broncos pretty easy against the Bulldogs. Even at this early stage, you can say the Bulldogs are not going to make the top eight. Look more and more, them and Manly look more and more like wooden spooners. The Eels, Clint Gufferson had a great game, 28 points to 4 over the Sharks. Sharks are probably missing Sean Johnson a bit, but the upset... And, of course, the Titans really gave the Cowboys a bit of a toweling, 44 points to 6. But the Tigers, what an upset over the Knights. And I'll tell you what, that half combination has really started to click for them at the Tigers.
Yeah, I really like Laurie, the fullback.
Looks good too, mate.
Isn't he a player? Young guy on the scene, and, he's making a big difference. And, the hooker, hooker's really good as well. And, I think good win for the Tigers. They really needed that. And to go to Newcastle and win's not easy. And, it might give them a bit of confidence. But, the other games you talk about, there's some real concerns for Manly and the Bulldogs and North Queensland Cowboys.
Yeah, even at this early stage, you can write them off. I think their season's already done, Bluey. The Bulldogs just look like, they've got some good individuals in there. Like, I really like Jeremy Marshall-King. I think he's a damn good hooker, but there doesn't seem to be any direction there. And Manly, like Des Hasler, like he must be under huge pressure because you've got Daly Cherry Evans, who's probably one of the best players in the comp, and you've also got Kieran Foran. Now, is Kieran Foran considered now as yesterday's man?
No, he's still a player. Look, I'm not surprised by this. I mean, they had one of their teammates, Keith Titmus, pass away, mate. At pre-season training, and the shock and the trauma of that, I always thought, gee, this is going to be really tough to navigate for everyone involved. So I'm not surprised. When you have things like that happen to you, football becomes secondary, and
it certainly does.
They look like that. They just look flat. You know, they were actually trying in the first half, but they were trying in the wrong way, like they were offloading everywhere and just shifting it, just trying to find something. That they were having a go, Manly, but there's nothing deep down in them. You know, and when we talk about being deep down, that's what the Warriors had, you know, for coming back like they did. You know, there was something there. Manly just haven't got it deep down in them at the moment.
Yeah, and it's quite concerning there. And it's concerning, as we said, those three teams, that there already is beginning to... There's a gap beginning to actually build between those three teams. Because you can have a look at the sides, like... you take those three sides. Until Sean Johnson comes back, the Sharks, I still think, are not looking like a top-eight side. But the rest, they're still... The West... the Tigers, through their win over the Knights, they put themselves into contention to say, don't forget about us. So, it could be quite interesting. Now, do we pick a game of the week? What do you reckon, Bluey?
There's only...
Who are the Bulldogs playing? I'll take the Bulldogs.
No, okay, mate. There's only one game that I think is... there's a lot of slack games this weekend, to be fair. But the Titans Raiders game looks like the tight one, and it's at the Titans. So pick one of them, Piggy. Pick one out of the Titans and the Raiders.
You go first, mate.
Mate, my form's shocking. I'm going to go to the Titans, and their Raiders are the hot favourites, so I'm going to go for the underdog.
You know what, I was going to go for the Titans too, but I'll take the Raiders, so that shouldn't be anything. Of course, the Warriors have the Roosters, and that should be a good game. Now, this is going to be interesting. The Warriors, you know, for the first time in a long time, may even go in as slight favourites for that game.
Well, just, you know, they're having a huge, huge problem at the Roosters with players with concussion. You know, both captains are out already, and now Carey. You know, but they've got a really good assembly line, you know. I could say everybody looking forward to see young Sam Walker come on and play at half. But, it's still going to be a tough game for the Warriors, to travel down there, play at the Sydney Cricket Ground. It's a bit of a different experience playing on an oval as well. So it's going to be a tough game for the Warriors, and obviously the Roosters will go favourites. But, gee, the Warriors can... You know, get that playing through their defence right. That's the key. You know, defend strongly like they did in the first two games. Their defence against Canberra was really poor in the first half. So if they can get that right, they're a chance.
Yep, that sounds the way to go, Blue. Well, thanks a lot for coming on board again. And Easter Monday, are you away this Easter at all? Or
Shooting away, hiding away somewhere.
Okay, so I might annoy Endicott. He sort of owes me he sort of owes us a favour, but
I'll still be right. I'll be back by then. So,
I'll tell you what, you're back on board. Well, and I have to say, you've added a lot, and you've given me a head start when it comes to the drinking vouchers. So, always great chatting to you, Bluey, and we'll catch up next Monday. Okay, mate?
No worries, brother. Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks a lot, Bluey. Bluey McLennan, what an awesome bloke, mate. Knows his league, just a real good dude. Okay, play a bit of music. Got a special guest next up. We're going to hopefully have Scott Goodman, High Performance Manager at Athletics New Zealand. Recently had their the national champs were in the Hawke's Bay. And so he's going to speak a bit on that. He's also going to speak on our medal hopes for Tokyo 2020, and as well as some surprises and who's still to qualify. Yeah.
grow up, I want to be an old woman. Oh, an old, no, 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 an old, old woman. And then I think I'm going to...
Okay, everyone, welcome back to the Sports Review here on Planet FM. And we're going to do something different today. Unfortunately, Mr. McNeice has got some urgent stuff he has to do at his place of employment. So we won't be doing anything on football today, but we decided to do something a bit different. On the line, I have the manager of high performance at Athletics New Zealand, Scott Goodman. He's kindly offered to come on the show. Over the weekend, the national championships were held in the Hawke's Bay, and there was a few records broken. You may have heard of Julia Ratcliffe's record in the hammer throw. So please welcome to the show, Scott Goodman. G'day, Scott. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks, Simon. How are you?
Yeah, good, good, good. Well, national championships, and of course, Julia Ratcliffe's performance was fantastic, but you also had Tom Walsh there as well, too. Had a half-decent throw as well, too, for heading into Tokyo 2020.
Yeah, no, Tom was pretty happy with that result, and they'll shut it down now. Well, shut it down, you know, have a lighter week, and then start to build up for Tokyo. Tom's in with a group with Dale Stevenson, Damon Barry Adams, and also Lauren Bruce that are all qualified. So they're hoping to be able to get to Europe in June. And, you know, that just depends on travel challenges at the moment.
It certainly does. And, of course, with COVID, we have to say the summer of athletics in New Zealand's actually been quite interesting. Of course, the contest between Tom Walsh and Jack O'Gill, that's been really watched, and it's great to see Dame Valerie Adams throwing real competitive throws as we head into the Olympics. Just realistically, from a high performance athletics point of view, medal hopes we're probably looking at Tom Walsh and maybe Jack O'Gill and Valerie Adams at this stage as our top medal hopes.
Yeah, well, Julia Ratcliffe and Lauren Bruce, how they're going, they're in a high probability. If they throw that range, 73, 74 metres, they can finish in the top three or four. So,
wow.
And Julia's got that heritage of, like, she won the gold medal at Commonwealth Games. So both of them have become really interesting with what's gone on in the last three or four months.
It's quite interesting because the biggest thing with COVID is that we've had to compete against each other, and of course, doing that, and of course, I believe that COVID may be the great equaliser when it comes to this Olympics this year on how much training most athletes have got. And I think, fortunately, in New Zealand, we have that luxury where we've been able to compete internally, Scott.
European Championships, indoor championships were on, I'm going to say, 3 weekends ago now in Poland. And the GB, Great Britain team, went, and I know from the Ireland team had similar statistics, but there was no crowds, but the teams travelled and about 20% of them have gone COVID positive. So things like that are happening around the world. So, you know, some of those athletes are going to have interrupted seasons, and even the plan for Tokyo, like there'll be opportunities. That's what you're getting at. Like, people are going to miss training because they're sick, or some will actually be missing their events because if they're coming to Tokyo and they've got high temperatures and things, they'll be asked to stand down. So we're going to be managing that the best we can from a New Zealand perspective. And, you know, we're fortunate that we have been told that we'll be able to get vaccinated over the next few weeks as well. So,
well, that's good.
You know, it's an advantage.
Certainly is. And, of course, who is still yet to qualify? And there is probably some concerns over Elijah McCartney. She has an Achilles injury, I believe. So how's progress with Elijah going at this stage?
Yeah, so Elijah jumped two weekends ago now off a short run. So normally she'd be off an 18-step run if she was going full pelt. So that was off 8 steps and she cleared 4:32. And they just wanted to look at things last week before Nationals. Mm. And they were just being cautious that she actually did a full training session on the Wednesday. So she's getting horribly close back to full capacity. And for her, the automatic qualifying distance is 4.70 meters. So that's within her range. You know, she's cleared well over 4.90. So if she can get back in May, June, it's still very possible for her to qualify for the Games and compete, hopefully, very successfully.
Of course, Nick Willis, how's Nick's progress getting on at this time?
Yeah, so Nick's ranked about 32 in the world, and under our policy, that's the cutoff where we're looking at athletes that are inside the top 32 for the first announcement for selection, which will be in the next 2 weeks. So hopefully I'm not a selector, but I'm well across the process. So we've got 10 automatic qualified athletes.
Yep.
And then we've got about another 10 that will be ranked in the top 32. Awesome. The cutoff we're looking at is this Thursday. So Nick will be in a group that they'll be looking at for conditional selection. And hopefully, you know, for him that he might get up. And that means we'll be able to support him right through to the Games. If he doesn't get the conditional selection now, he still would have up to 22nd of June for Nick to try and do the automatic or move back up the rankings. So he's back in the US and he is planning to race again in May, June. So
that's great news.
I'm quietly confident he'll be in our team. I hope he's in our team. Yeah.
And Portia Bing, has her qualifying going so far?
Same thing. She hasn't done the automatic. She's not far off it and she is ranked inside the top 32. So the nomination panel will be looking at her over the next 3 or 4 days, and yeah, she's got a reasonable chance. They have to be able to explain or put the case to the New Zealand Olympic Committee that they believe she's capable of top 16. So she'll be an interesting one over the next week or so.
Certainly will be. And well, you know, I always look forward to the Olympics and seeing the old silver, the black singlet with the silver fern. But there's a guy I've been having a really good look at now. He's probably more a future towards 2024, but nothing would surprise me. Sam Tanner, he's been running well in the collegiate circuit in the US.
Yeah, he's really exciting. He's done the automatic qualifier. So, I can't see why they won't be announcing him at our selection announcement in a couple of weeks. But he's really interesting. He's fascinating. He has a change of speed. So in the 1500 metres, like if you watch that event, and that's what Nick Willis has had over the years, that there's guys there that might have slightly faster times, but that's when they're running even pace. You go to the Olympics, you got rounds, semi-finals and a final, and a lot of strategy comes into it. And Sam Tanner, he's a gun. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how he goes this year.
Nothing would surprise me, because I've heard the gentleman that comes on our show just after you, Mark Watson, has been speaking to me for the last year about him, and I've just kept on looking at him. This nothing would surprise me if he makes that Olympic final.
Yeah, like I said, he's got a real kick. He's a smart young kid. He's a fascinating kid to talk to, and you know, he hasn't been smashed by big mileage at a young age. He's come through. Steve Willis, so Nick's brother, was talking about him about 3 years ago. He was telling me, oh, there's this kid, and he's got a really good 400-metre, 600-metre sprint at the end of the 1500. So nowadays, that's almost essential, especially in championship racing, because, you know, you don't go out like a metronome. It goes... Yeah, you just got to get in the right spot in the round and the semi to get through on the first six if you can, and then the finals are wide open. Look at Nick in Rio. Like, he got in the right spot, and they ran slow, and it suited him. He kicked home, so it was great.
Yeah, if they'd given it, I believe if they had another 10 metres in their race, I reckon Nick would have overhauled, possibly could have won it between me and you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, it was exciting.
Anyway, Scott, I have to say thank you so much for coming on the air and helping me out at the last minute, and I hope that we can continue to talk prior to Tokyo 2020, which will be held in 2021, but this is thing. But and hopefully that we can we'll keep this going, and you might be able to flick a couple of your top athletes my way if they ever want to come and have a bit of a chat.
Yep, no problems. Thanks for your time and thanks for talking to me,
Scott. It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Scott Goodman, the manager of high performance at Athletics New Zealand. What interesting talk, and it's quite amazing what he was saying. Like, naturally, when we go for medal hopes, we mention Valerie and Tom Walsh, maybe Jack O'Gill, but he's dead right what he's saying. Julia Ratcliffe and Lauren Bruce, they're up there. Nothing would surprise me if they come through and win a medal. Okay, we'll play a bit of music and we'll have the panel on next. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review, proudly sponsored by westprint.co.nz for all your printing needs. And I have to say, great weekend of sports, and I'd like to welcome our wonderful panel, the man, the legend and the hopeless romantic, Mr. Mark Watson. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. And of course, the silver tongue, Silver Fox, the host of the CRC Motorsport Show on TV3, Sean Summerfield. How are you, mate?
Good, 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 mate. How are you?
Oh, excellent. Well, we're going to start off with you, young man. Liam Lawson. A first, a non-finish, and a third in the first Formula 2 at Bahrain.
Yeah, just brilliant, mate. The kids all class. You know, I sort of don't know what to say about him other than he's just another great Kiwi that's come through. I actually first bumped into him. I'd heard this kid was monitoring Formula Ford a few years ago, and I was at Manfield and were covering the Grand Prix, and I saw his car walk past, and I thought, hang on, he's wearing Kenny Smith's helmet. Now, I might have told you this before, apologies if I have.
No,
I thought, this is strange. And I went up and said, mate, yeah, that's Kenny Smith's helmet colours. He goes, yeah, it's his helmet. What happened? He goes, well, it turned out I was growing and my head grew too big for my helmet and it didn't fit me anymore. It was hurting my head, so Kenny's loaned me his helmet. Now, pure Kenny, it was only a loan. He wasn't giving it to him. But the thing that, yeah, that just sort of summed up Liam's humble beginnings. You know, he had a couple of sisters who were very, like, national Irish dancing champs, and they had to sort of give it up because the family were focused on Liam. It turned out to be a pretty damn good bet to give up from spending all that money on those dresses that you know about that, Eamon.
I've never had to spend them. Fortunately, I've had no children to do that, so I've been lucky like that. But they are very expensive.
Trust me, it's painful. But yeah. The thing is, it's cheaper than go-karts, I'll tell you that. But it's, he's just an amazing kid, and he's got a heck of a season this year. So he raced really, really well in Formula 3 last year. He's gone up to Formula 2.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know it goes 3-2-1.
Mm-hmm.
But he is also down to race a Ferrari with Red Bull in DTM. He'll be teamed up with, the mind's just slipping here, the young fella that was dropped from Red Bull last year. They'll be both driving for in the German touring cars, but that isn't like supercars in Australia. They actually have cars like Aston Martins and Ferraris in this series. So he's got a heck of a season lined up. I think he was unlucky in that second race too. He can't help it when, you know, he crashed into.
But he is a
class act, and I've heard stories last year. His team, I don't think his team were the sharpest operation, and they did cost him a few races. Stuff I heard just from behind the scenes. But mate, he is another Kiwi freak behind the wheel.
Certainly is, and I tell you what, and when you think about it, you know, like the last year's winner of Formula 2 was Mick Schumacher, the son of the great Michael Schumacher.
Yeah, exactly, and he's gone into the, obviously into Formula 1. He's a bit of a tough welcome. It still managed 16th in the Bahrain Formula 1 last night, but he was the driver all the lower teams wanted because obviously a name like Schumacher, and he had a couple of them, both Alfa Romeo and Haas were fighting for him. Haas managed to win that, but there was a heck of a moment too. The other driver, Mazepin, had a big, big crash right where Romain Grosjean crashed last year, and I don't know if you've seen that, the series Drive to Survive on Netflix. Even if you don't like motorsport, it's one of the greatest bits of television, and there's an episode called Man on Fire. And it covers Romain Grosjean's crash at Bahrain last year where he went through the wall and the car burst into flames. And he somehow emerged from the flames, and it actually has you in tears. But anyway, back to the Formula 1, Eamon. I'm going to segue here because Hamilton and Verstappen, a fantastic duel for the race, came down some clever strategy with tyres, and Hamilton prevailed. But also had Lando Norris for McLaren up and fourth, Perez, and the other Red Bull in fifth, and then you had a Ferrari in sixth, Sainz, Ferrari in eighth. So we're now looking like a season where we've got some competition. Aston Martin, their first race, Stroll was ninth, and Tsuki Tsunoda, the new Japanese rookie, in tenth in the AlphaTauri. So we're actually seeing a lot of variety now, and I think it needed it because, yes, we know Mercedes is the best, Hamilton's the best, but you do want to see some competition. And I'll be honest with you, I did actually cancel my contract to watch it near the end of last season, because even I got bored.
Well, at least we've got Formula 2 to have a look at as well this year. So that's what was special with Liam Lawson. Have to say, Mark, Ironman New Zealand and Taupo, Braden Curry and Hannah Wells taking the men's and women's races. Now, Braden Curry, you spoke about before. This guy looks like a fantastic athlete. How do you reckon he'd go in Krona and away?
Well, he's already had a fifth place finish in Hawaii, Braden Curry. He's as tough as they come. His ability to suffer, his ability to endure what those guys endure at the top end of the race is something you can't coach. It's an inherent quality, and it's remarkable. Bevan Doherty was another one, sort of reminds me a lot of Braden Curry, just that ability that just to push to the levels that they do push. Look, Braden, I think, is good enough. To win Hawaii, you probably need one or two athletes to have a slightly bad day. I think in the past it's probably just been gaining a bit of experience and learning how to maybe at times just be a little bit more patient, a little bit more measured. He's a guy who, he shouldn't be able to swim the times he swims, but he just guts it out. He's just so tough. And, yeah, he's a complete athlete. I mean, he's won the Coast to Coast, I think, four times. This is the second New Zealand Ironman win. I was talking to him in Tauranga this year after the half there and we were just chatting and I sort of said, are you angry? Are you upset about COVID and the fact that Hawaii wasn't run last year? And he said he wasn't, but he would be if it sort of happened again this year and beyond, because he's arguably at peak of his career now. And, you win the Hawaiian Ironman and you're basically, we got the Olympic Games and triathlon, but the pinnacle, the Wimbledon, the green jacket is Hawaiian Ironman. Yep. And I think, Cameron Brown's been second up there twice in two thirds, but I think Braden does have the ability to try and win up there. But in saying that, Mike Phillips, who finished second, he's had a top 16 finish in Hawaii before, and he's only getting better. And then we got the young guy, Carl Smith, who's only 24, who I thought might struggle a little bit over the Ironman distance, but without doubt amongst one of the best half Ironman athletes in the world. So there's a really good little succession plan coming through. On the women's side, Hannah Wells, well, she's pretty much her and Teresa Adam, who's been crook, have really much dominated the women's scene here in recent times. So I think she was always going to win it if things, unless she picked up a mechanical or got sick. And, it's probably on the women's side. We just don't quite have the depth at the moment, which is a little bit disappointing. But, people, I just don't think realise just how tough and how good you've got to be to win that Ironman. I mean, to get off the bike off 180K time trial, where you're not drafting, and then to get off and run a 2-hour 40 marathon on an undulating course after you've also swum 4 kilometres in 47 minutes and trying to choose. It's just simply remarkable.
Hey, Mark, did Braden Curry, was his big breakthrough in Coast to Coast?
Yeah, he was. He came through the multi-sport, and there was a long time there, Sean, when, you had Steve Gurney and guys winning the Coast to Coast, but I think the professional triathletes thought, well, it's still a little bit of a club race. I mean, a few guys, Gordon Walker, who coaches Lisa Carrington, and Richard Usher, took it to another level in terms of saying, well, we believe we can step off from multi-sport into a triathlon, and they did well, and I think Curry's just taken it to another level again. Dougal Allen, very good over the Ironman distance, who won the race this year as well. So, our multi-sport athletes have really just stepped up their game, and I think they see, multi-sport doesn't have a lot of money in it at a professional level, where Ironman and triathlon does.
Yeah, I just wondered if, the coast-to-coast, because it hurts, especially for those competitors. I wonder if that is mentally that helps with somewhere like Kona, which I always get the impression that it burns people in the head as much as it does in the legs.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think in any of those events, it comes down to who's got a head like granite, who is prepared to suffer, and who does have the mental game. And you see it a lot with age group athletes. You see a lot of age group athletes or amateurs walking during the marathon, and yet over the last 3 or 4K, when they get a sniff to the finish line, you see them running again. Now, if it was purely physical, they wouldn't be able to do that last 3 or 4K and run. The fact they can get up and run quite well says that, having to play the head game in the swim, having to break down, mental fatigue is primarily what will hold a lot of athletes back. And Cameron Brown's a guy who clearly won it 12 times. He's got a head like granite, but you've got to be no different than what we've just talked about in motorsport. The Shane Van Gisbergens of this world, they just have something, and Braden Curry has that in truckloads.
Certainly does, guys. And I have to say, well, during the week we had the Decades Award for the Halbergs, and I was so pleased to see that the Supreme Award went to Bond and Murray, because them two were probably the New Zealand's most dominant crew in that decade when it came to rowing. I felt really sorry for Marty Drysdale, taking nothing away from the great man Richie McCaw, but, you know, do we put Rugby World Cups over Olympic gold medals? And potentially he could have won three Olympic gold medals if he hadn't been crook in Beijing.
I don't know, guys. I just think, you know, those two blokes were unbeaten, end of story, world champs, Olympics, you name it. So they're irrefutable. But, you know, Richie McCaw, if you look at it as a whole, not just what he achieved in scores and titles, but I think what he epitomised in a sporting sense as well. And sometimes, Mark, I'm sure you'd agree, sometimes some of these things in sport are a little bit intangible.
Yeah, look, I think, I look at the rowers and I go, man, I mean, I've just talked about the Ironman, but boy, how tough is the sport of rowing? It is absolutely brutal. I mean, you're doing sort of 10, 11 sessions a week, you know, you're basically just squatting, you know, 200 times over, you know, in the case of a rowing aid, over sort of 6 or 7 minutes with your heart rate through the roof. You know, cold days, bad days, you've got to get up there, you've got to do it. Look, I think McCaw, arguably the greatest rugby player, but I guess we're... You know, the only thing I have with McCaw is sometimes, you know, you've got 14 other guys around you that can, you can sort of lean on a little bit at times. You've also got, you know, plenty of financial remuneration in the background. I think there are a lot of bells and whistles that go with being a professional rugby player. And the case of the rowers and stuff, I mean, you're there because you're an amateur. You're there because you want to represent your country. You want to win Olympic gold medals. But look, I think they pretty much got the awards right this time. It is subjective. It is a tough one to do, you know. But, I thought Lisa Carrington thoroughly deserved on the women's side as well. I mean, you know, it's another sport that, again, incredibly tough, incredibly lonely at times.
And, of course, as we build up to Tokyo 2020 in July, and, of course, I've just had a quick check of the time differences between Tokyo and Auckland, Mark. Now, I know that it might be hard to get you during that time. During that time in Tokyo, Mark?
Well, I think it's about 4 hours, isn't it? I lived up there for a period of time.
Four to five hours. It'll be 5 hours in July because we've got daylight.
Well, you know, if I'm available, I'll certainly be available. But, yeah, you know, I have signed contracts for that and the Paralympics, and I'll probably stay up there in between. No point coming home for 2 weeks and having to go into isolation then fly back up. So, but I tell you what, they're a conversation for another week, aren't they? Because there's some fascinating little things happening here and with the politics of selection and certain sports like triathlon.
Yes, I saw that. So that was interesting.
How athletes will go.
Yeah, well, it, you know, if you'd have said a year ago, it probably looked way off that we would be having Olympics this year, but it's really looking good. Have to say, what are some of the highlights you gentlemen are looking forward to in the sporting week? Hello?
I've always gone first. I was letting Mark go.
I'll let you go, Sean, lady, first.
Well, I'm actually looking forward to more Super Rugby, and I never thought I'd say this, but I enjoyed a Chiefs-Blues game, and not for the result, but for the excitement of the finish, and I'm going to stand by the fact that I think these guys are playing great rugby, and I'm really enjoying it, and I can't wait for more.
Okay, so we have 46 seconds, Mark. You have the last word.
I think we should just congratulate the Warriors. I mean, you're still not going to get overly excited because the Warriors have, you know, failed to deliver, and I guess they built a brand around failure in the last 10 years. But look, it is nice. It is a nice thing to come back and win a game. And I actually also think the fact that they are now anchored in Australia, not having to fly across the ditch every week, actually benefits them, to be fair.
It certainly does. Yeah. Well, it certainly does.
At least well, not to keep your hopes up, aren't they? Jeez.
I tell you what, they're like, it's like a relationship with the Warriors. You think it's all over, then they pull something out of the hat. So, on that note, guys, I hope you guys have a wonderful evening.